Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
This week, we've decided to talk about how to Google as a developer.
Does that include Bing as well?
I mean, if you want to.
So Clayton, this started out as your idea. You want to lead us in?
Yeah, so often at work and also with some of the other endeavors that that we take on, we get asked questions. And I mean, we don't know the answer. I mean, you know, there's only so much knowledge that anybody can keep in their head. But most of the time, those answers are answered within like the first three or four results of a simple Google that we do. And then we just have to forward the information onto whoever asked the question. So it kind of made me think maybe a lot of developers either don't know how to Google the same way that I Google, or they're just not taking the time to solve the problem. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they are trying to solve the problem, and that the actual issue is that when they search for something, they're not getting the same results that I'm getting. To that end, I kind of made out the outline for today's show.
Yeah, I got to say that I've actually gotten quite good at searching for problems or solutions to problems or errors that I encounter. And I've gotten pretty good about finding results that are useful to me. So hopefully we can provide some value and help others in their search endeavor as well.
So Clayton, I guess, where shall we start here?
Well, the first thing that I could think of that people might be getting wrong is the search terms that they're using. You know, maybe they're typing in the wrong thing, and that's why they're not getting the right results. To that end, I came up with a couple bullet points with a few things underneath each one that I think might help. The first one is to remove any noise words. Those are things that actually make whatever you're searching for an actual sentence. Like, Google doesn't care if you know how to write a sentence. It only needs the tiny bits of information that are absolutely required to find something that's going to be relative to what you're searching for.
So that seems like a pretty good thing to do. What happens though when like today I'm trying to search for how to set things up in Azure DevOps?
I mean, you could simply search for Azure DevOps setup or configuration.
Except Azure and DevOps are both noise words, I feel like.
Yeah, that was a bad marketing choice on their part.
I think if you searched for the three-word combination, I think that it would come up with the right results. Which brings us kind of to the next point, which is to only use keywords or phrases. If the actual thing you're searching for could also be a noise word, if it is alone and only grouped with other words that mean something to the search engine, then hopefully you should get the result you're looking for. All right. So the next problem that I think people might come across is no results found. So you search for whatever it is, and the page that you get back is a bunch of gibberish. None of it seems to relate to anything that you're actually trying to find. My strategy in those situations is to change the search term positions. So sometimes the order of the search words has some impact on the results that you get back. And the second strategy is to change the term without changing the meaning. So with the Azure DevOps, instead of saying Azure, you could maybe say Microsoft Cloud, right? So you've changed the wording, but it's still technically the same thing. DevOps, I don't know. depending on what you're after, with the Azure DevOps configuration, I don't know what you would change it to, but...
I can give you an example. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the previous was VSTS. And so in that situation, what I've had to do, even though I'm looking for current documentation, because it was more of a rebranding thing, I've had to change it to looking for documentation that's focused on VSTS. And I would imagine that part of this is just due to the fact that the brands of Azure and the term DevOps, the Azure has its own brand and DevOps has, is a very vague term, right? And it's sort of a buzzwordy thing. So it gets put in a lot of different things. But it became very difficult to, because there isn't a lot of specific Azure DevOps material out there that is kind of difficult. So in that situation, I've mostly changed to searching for VSTS, looking for how to configure something in VSTS instead of Azure DevOps. And then it just works just fine.
Yeah. Maybe start looking at Azure Portal or Azure Dashboard or something like that.
The next thing that I thought of was errors. So maybe when you were looking at the error that you got in your application and you tried to go search for it, maybe you spelled something wrong. It's a lot of the errors are very specific. And so when you try to grab the search terms from the error and put them into the thing, it doesn't come out right. So what I would say for that is to directly copy, like highlight and copy the error. Usually when you get an error message, people are searching for the whole thing. So all of the words, even the small words, it, the, so, you know, those kinds of words, they are significant to the error as a whole. So copy the whole thing.
Yeah. If I've got an error with a stack trace or something like that, I'll grab the first meaningful line, remove any of my class specific or project specific language and try to get the beginning to end without anything specific in it, wrap it in quotes, and usually I'll get a hit in the first one or two results.
Yeah, that was going to be the next suggestion, was to remove anything that's specific to your application, as that's probably not going to be in abundance on the internet. I feel like a lot of people also don't know how to read the stack trace. Take your time, go through and actually read each line of the stack trace down to a point where it starts to make sense. If that first line of error doesn't give you any results, and then copy up the first line where you think is actually a problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of information in the stack trace. You know, gone are the days that you got just object reference not set to instance of object, and then you're done, right?
Well, unless that's what you get.
Well, yeah, but usually you at least get pointed to a line number in your class file in your project, and then bubbling up the stack into the framework or something like that.
Yeah, the errors are definitely getting better. There's a lot more information attached. And sometimes the actual error that you need to look for is that third or fourth line of the stack trace and the actual line that gets reported. So this is especially apparent in front-end applications like Angular or React. Because of the way they're built, sometimes the error that you receive is very generic and it doesn't make any sense. But if you dig a little bit deeper, that third or fourth line of the stack trace has the actual information that you need to copy and search for.
Have you noticed any big differences between like JavaScript and .NET stack traces? Are there any tips or tricks that you've come across or you often forget to convey to others?
So I work mostly in an Angular application right now, Angular 6, almost 7. We'll be upgrading to 7 soon. And the Angular errors are just horrible. They, depending on what you're doing, like with Angular CLI, the slightest little thing is wrong in your application. You go to build and you get an error that provides like zero information. So persistence has been the only thing that's really helped me out with that. You know, taking the error message that showed up in the, as the exception error or somewhere in the stack trace and copy pasting, rewording, changing the verbs and the nouns, obviously making sure to leave out any application specific stuff.
Do you think any of that difficulty comes in your project specific or how you've laid out the project or your team has laid out the project? Is it part of the translation or is it specific to Angular or what do you think could be the cause of that?
A lot of the errors that we got recently, we were using a custom build process and we switched over to Angular CLI. And I don't think there was anything wrong necessarily with our application, but the configuration did not build quite right in Angular CLI. And Angular CLI was having a lot of trouble giving any information about what was wrong. And I'm not the only one that's getting those errors. In searching, I found tons and tons of people that had the same errors. Some of them had those errors 2 years ago. Some of them had those errors 3 months ago. So it seems like, at least with Angular, that this is an ongoing thing, that they just have these terrible errors. And I know that it was a complaint, and people say that Angular 2 and above has much better errors than Angular JS did. I'm not sure that's true, but in C-sharp development, I find the errors to be very helpful because of the way it's compiled. It can usually, almost 100% of the time, tell you exactly where something went wrong, whereas the JavaScript, it can't. Once you compile from TypeScript to JavaScript and then minimize it and then deploy it to the internet, it has no idea what happened. It's just gobbledygook. I mean, cannot inject provider for function. Like, that's not helpful. There's no way that's ever going to be helpful. So if you don't catch those errors in development where you're using source mapped files, then you'll never catch them in prod. And even then, the source maps sometimes don't work correctly, depending on whatever has gone on in your code for the transpilation. I would assume if you're using React, you can run into the same kinds of issues if you're transpiling, like from ECMAScript, 2018 or whatever, to ES5. Are you doing that, John? Are you transpiling or?
Yeah, we've got a step in there. But I learned a while ago to just bend to the will of the framework or the library that you're using.
So you gave up.
I gave up, and now I adapt to whatever I happen to be using at the moment.
I have a certain resistance to some of that.
Well, I find a number of different frameworks and or libraries are very opinionated about how they would like for you to use them. So if you go outside of those bounds, it's on you for any problems you encounter.
Yeah, and they won't help you out at all.
Yeah, if you can work within the confines that they've dictated, you're going to typically have a much better time. Or at least if you encounter a problem, others will likely have encountered that same problem and have probably posted it all over Stack Overflow.
The next thing that I had was, I guess, how to search. So try to keep it short. If you are using a particular language or framework or library, or you're doing a common task, then include those things in your search. If, you know, like if the first try you don't get anything, then add in C#, or add in AngularJS, or add in a Jasmine or Mocha, or, you know, add in build for the CLI.
Yeah, so this is a little different than the approach that I actually take, which is not to focus. Very similar, but I actually don't focus on keeping it short. I actually try to give it almost more as like almost a phrase the same question that I would ask a coworker. And usually, I can't say that, and maybe I need to change my methodology, but I try to kind of add as much specifics to the thing as possible, and then begin removing those as I find no results.
I will sometimes go to Google and just be like, "Hey Google, how do I whatever?"
I never type in "Hey Google."
Well, I don't type "Hey Google," but I will type in, "How do I install this thing?" or "How do I do this task?" And I'll give that a go. You know, just if I can use natural language, I will. But if I don't see results in the first, you know, 4 or 5 search results, then I'll switch over and I'll try to limit, and I'll be like, okay, I'm using this framework, I'm using this library, and I'm trying to do this thing. And I'll just put those words in and see what I get.
Yeah, that is actually very close to what I do. So then I begin to remove it and remove any of the natural language words first, and begin to pare down, and then remove even specifics as needed in order to, until I find some sort of valid result, and then I'll add things back in until I think one of the biggest questions about this whole thing is sort of how do you, which I know we don't have on our bullet points here necessarily, but maybe this kind of ties into the next bit. But how do you filter out the noise of what you're getting? So when you're looking at these results, right, there's lots of noise, and you have to be able to quickly assess what those things are, and how do you say, hey, this isn't worth my time, I need to go change the search term, versus go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that does sort of tie into the next major bullet point, which is sites that do and don't work. So in the search results, I will classify noise as anything that, so in, at least in Google, I imagine Bing has the same kind of thing, but at least in Google, at the bottom of a search result, it'll say does not include, and then a word, and that word is something that was in your search terms that's not in this article that it found. If you get a lot of those, then you need to go and fix your search. Sites that almost always deliver the information that you want are Stack Overflow, blogs on Medium, and a couple other blog sites. The super individual sites like bobsprogramming.com, those are hit or miss. You never know whether those are going to be good or not. But for some reason, even though anybody can get on Medium, when you get a blog post from Medium, it seems to be what you're looking for. I don't know why that is. John has a spiel about documentation that he'd probably like to bring up.
Sure. Yeah, you've got a note here. Documentation sites, should you even bother?
Yeah, that's because I normally don't.
Right. Yeah, I was actually at Little Rock Tech Fest and on the trolley going around the city, and struck up a conversation with the gentleman sitting in front of me who happened to be on the Microsoft Docs team, on the ASP.NET Docs team, I believe. And we were just talking about the documentation that their team is producing. I said, you know, the documentation that the humans on your team are producing and the individuals that are contributing from the community, those documentation pages are fantastic. The generated documentation, however, really provides no use to me. And he said, really? How so? And by the way, I might want to reach out to you after this and get your take on this so that I can present this to the higher ups, because they've also been kind of trying to determine how they can improve their generated documentation. And so I conveyed the story that when was it .NET Core 2.1 came out, they in the release notes they were talking about, they were releasing the iHTTP client factory. And I was very excited about that because my team had rolled our own wrapper around that so we could generate our own clients inside a factory and reuse those. And so a day or two after the release announcement came, I went searching for the documentation and went to Google and typed in my search results and came to the documentation that was generated. And it was really no more than what I could get inside Visual Studio if I had just hit F12.
Which, for anyone who doesn't know, what's F12 do?
Yeah, it'll take you to the definition inside the package, right? So I land on that site, and that really frustrates me because I've already been there inside my editor. So when I'm searching for something, I want to find usages of it and find documentation and find maybe pitfalls to avoid and how you would implement this thing and things to be aware of, like potential misuses of things, right? So just a few results down in the results page in Google was another link, and we'll provide links to both of these in the show notes, which is human-generated documentation with a number of different contributors, including Steve Gordon, Scott Addy, the Green Dinosaur is quite familiar if anybody's looked at the documentation. And there's a whole page of how to implement the iHTTP client factory and prerequisites, consumption patterns, named clients, and just all kinds and ways to use this, right? This is just phenomenal work and exactly what I'm looking for when I'm going out to the internet to search for this type of information. So I think that the moral of that is there's still room for improvement in much of the generated documentation sites, but anything that has had a human touch or human presence on that in put assembling that, you're typically going to get a lot of value out of that.
Yeah, I would say normally I don't use documentation sites, and it's It's probably because most of them do appear to be computer generated or just poorly written in the first place. I do have a catalog of some that I like. It's not too many people are using it anymore, but the Knockout.js library, the documentation for that was fantastic. Probably the best that I've seen. So I would go to that all the time. The documentation for Angular 2, in my opinion, is terrible. There are two sides to that site. And when you are searching for how do I use this thing that's in the API, almost always you will get what you would say is the generated documentation, which is literally, here is the definition of the function, here are the properties and their types. It doesn't tell you how to use it, what it's for, anything. Somewhere else on the site, they have the information that's handwritten and is useful. But when you search in their little search bar, you always get the machine documentation, which is useless. And then new libraries, like Blazor, I don't necessarily use the Blazor documentation. Instead, I go to a site that's called Learn Blazor. And I think that documentation is really well put together. Not that there's anything wrong with the internal Blazor documentation, but I prefer the other one.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of times that human generated and when it's being done well and the auto generated, there's like no connection between the two of them. And so you can kind of get headed off in one direction when you're searching, and you can end up in those places that are not. I was actually recently running into very similar issues with Xamarin, and I would go into certain parts of the documentation and find out some things, which were in this case, I think even both of them might have been human documented, but they were two sets of some of the same information, and they were not interconnected. And so flowing between the two, and when I was Googling, I would end up in the one set, and sometimes I would end up in the other set. And it became kind of a pain to try to figure out, okay, what is right and what is, or where there were slight nuances, or which one's more useful in a given situation for what I was looking up.
Yeah, and back to what Ash had mentioned, his preferred way of Googling for answers. I tend to follow much the same pattern, is that I'll take a lot of the keywords and a lot of what I would think of as tags on like Stack Overflow or maybe on a blog post or something. So I would start maybe with C# .NET Core dependency injection or something like that, if I were looking for something specific to that. React router or Material UI React whatever version, right? And with that, as I'm looking through the results, I also take note of which sites the results are coming from, and then I do kind of give more weight to Stack Overflow answers in items that I will click on. And I know that some of our Stack Overflow friends that work there might be a little disappointed that I'm not using their search engine to search directly on their site, because I know they've put a lot of effort into that. But I still find a lot more value in going to Google or one of the search engines that you get varied results. But I often end up at Stack Overflow because I'm typically searching the way I would expect the results to come up there.
Yeah, and that's basically what I do. I like the way you put it with the tags, because that's generally the way that I will search when I'm looking for something. The next thing that I thought of was to narrow your gaze. And this has more to do with solving the problem that you're trying to solve, less so with the search, although it helps with the search. A lot of people will get overwhelmed. They see a problem and it's just a big wall of text, and they can't actually see the problem. So this is why I say, don't get overwhelmed. Take a deep breath. Look at each piece of the problem, or if it's a search, look at each search result. Don't do your search and then just scan down to the middle of the page and start looking at something there. Like that first search result, you need to look at it. Look at the title that it has. Look at the website that it's coming from. Between those two things, you can usually either decide whether you want to look at it more or throw it out as a potential search. But at least look at those two things. Too many people will just scan And the answer is the second search result, and their eyes just pass right over it. And it's the same thing in code. You're trying to solve a problem. The bug is on line 13, and you look at line 6, and you look at line 20, and you just completely skip over line 13. Always just slow down, take a breath, look at each line or each search result in turn. Make sure you understand what that specific one is doing or what it's saying to you, and then move on to the next thing. With that, I would say choose wisely. So only dig into things that you think will get you more information or get you closer to solving the problem. Look at every one of them, but then only dig into the ones that you think are valuable. And you'll get a better sense of that as time goes on and you've kind of built like an internal catalog of sites that you know work. Like we've got Stack Overflow and a couple others. Like we know documentation from here is going to be good. Documentation from there is going to be bad. You kind of got to build that up yourself. But slow down, choose wisely, and don't skip over things.
One of the things that I do is I like to use my tabs. I oftentimes when I'm going down through those results, I'll be assessing and I'll actually click off one or two or three. So I'll maybe scan through each one and I'll just simply open another tab, but still keep staying focused on the search results page, which sort of lets me go, oh yeah, I think this is going to be good. I think this is going to be good. I think this is going to be good. And I'll get like three or four of those results, which I think are going to be good. And then I go back to my tabs, not closing that out. And I begin to scan through those documents to see, is this actually helpful? But that gives me, first I have to widen it up, but that lets me sort of go and say, look at the results instead of seeking out the full first result automatically and going down and having to like figure that out. Gives me a chance to quickly assess the results themselves and then say of these 10 results or whatever, I have now three of them to go into in depth, and I'll take that in depth look into each one of those three. And then if those don't pan out, that's when we're going back to change in search terms and other words.
Yeah, I didn't think to put that in there as to open up new tabs, but I also do that. I don't ever like leave the search page. I will open a new tab and then investigate that tab and then come back to the search page. I don't normally open them in series like that, like two or three at a time. Although that's not a bad idea. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and that also is helpful. Like a month or two later, you can come back and remember what it was you were working on. You still got all those tabs open.
It's true. And close the tabs when you're done with them.
I mean, joking aside, I'll if I find something unuseful, then I'll close it out. But oftentimes, even when I'm scanning through that first initial pass on that document, I don't necessarily, unless I find like spot on exactly what I'm looking for, oftentimes I'll sort of set that aside and then go back and see, is there more information? And then I'll kind of like find, generally speaking, these are the sites or these are the pieces that I'm going to look for. And then I just kind of keep those things that are helpful open and close them out as I find like more helpful sites. And that's sort of how I help. Keeping my options open, but also keeping them in a manageable way so I'm not becoming overwhelmed.
Because you can only open so many tabs in Internet Explorer.
Well, maybe on some of the work machines that we're working on.
He's using Edge.
Actually, Edge is great for tab management, in my iPhone.
Yeah, it's the first browser I opened to download Firefox.
and you can draw on it. I mean, that's useful.
I mean, I use all of them, but Chrome, I don't know, the couple of last work machines that I've had have been like very short on RAM, and Chrome just burns through. So,
but you're a developer. You need all the RAM. Have you told them you need all the RAM?
All right. You've got to note that any results past the fifth page are wasting time.
Yeah, I was being generous there. This is under a bullet point called stay shallow, right? So don't dig too deep into anything. And I don't know, I must have been in a good mood that day, because I do say, you know, any results past the fifth page are wasting time. I think you beg to differ on that one, right?
Yeah, if I have to go to the second page of results in Google, I will refine my search before I hit the next button.
if I've just started searching, I'm totally with you. and I was being extremely generous. I don't think I ever go to the fifth page. Second, maybe third, if I've been searching and I just can't find the answer. But yeah, I don't know why I put fifth.
Yeah, I would say even if it's been a while, you know, I've been at this for 5 or 10 minutes and I'm starting to get frustrated. I've tried every permutation of search result or search.
I'm talking about a week and a half.
Yeah, no, I never would have lasted a week and a half. If I spent more than 15 or 20 minutes on it, I'm going directly to the GitHub repo for the project. I'm reaching out on Twitter to the project lead. I'm tracking down somebody that can provide some useful information because I'm not going to the fifth page of Google results.
I would have liked to hurt somebody during the second week of that, but I have recently been working on a particular error for over a week, the same error. You know, you can only open so many pages and get the same not helpful response. Which is, that might have been why I said the fifth page, because I was digging deep. But good news is I did find a solution to the error. It just took me a minute.
It was on the sixth page.
No, I still don't think I ever went past five. Even to five.
So that's a good question though, is at what point should you stop digging that far? At what point do you say, I must be doing something wrong, or I must be, you know, I can't see the forest for the trees, right? And there's something that is preventing you from finding the answer to the problem.
I think that's situation dependent. So like if you're a junior developer, that time limit's like 15 minutes, half an hour at the most. Like put forth some good effort and look for the thing. If you can't find it in somewhere between 15 minutes and a half hour, you need to stop and go ask a more senior developer for help, because you are not going to figure it out anytime soon. If you're a mid-level developer, I might say the same rules apply. Maybe give you a little bit longer if you think you're on the right track. You know, maybe 45 minutes. If you're in my situation, I'm the tech lead. I mean, like, there's no developer that knows more about what I was trying to do at my office than me. So at that point, my only option is the internet. I probably should have tweeted somebody on the core team or something like that. But like that's my last ditch effort is actually trying to get a hold of somebody on the team. So reporting a GitHub issue or something. But you know, if you're at the top, if the problem has to be solved, if the business has said this has to be done, you just got to keep digging.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that there's always a bigger fish out there. So there's always somewhere you can go for help. There's always somebody out there that can provide that help.
Not everybody has a direct line to Mishko.
Somebody in your network does, and you should reach out to that person.
I'll phone you next time, John.
I'll make some calls. We'll make it happen.
So if we move past the number of pages of search results, which I think John is more close to what I would want people to do, the fifth page thing is like, you're at the end of your rope. Like don't ever go past the fifth page. But normally in normal conditions, you shouldn't go past the first page or at most the second page.
So I would say that I have done this, and that is
all the way to 15.
No, there's been a couple times where I've been in that situation where there's no one for me to elevate this to. I'm really struggling to get the right search terms, and almost all of the things that are coming is noise. Part of the issue is I don't know what to search. I have very little information to actually find the problem, and so I'm really struggling to kind of like narrow these results in. And in that case, I don't actually go all five pages, but I might just randomly pick on page six or page four and just see what's there. And that's sort of like a random spot check. And that's sort of like I'm at my wit's end and I really don't have anywhere else to turn, because I'm really struggling to understand what should I even search. And that's a very nuanced situation and should not be the norm.
Like maybe if I just click on something, it'll magically work.
Yes, exactly. Maybe. And sometimes it's even just to get different ideas on what I can refine the search for. And I'll see those things and I'll go, okay. And I'll readjust my search so that I can, narrow those things in.
Yeah. But don't discount the rubber duck. Just go talk to somebody and try to reiterate the problem to them. And just doing that, that'll help you form a better idea. Maybe they'll catch a keyword. Have you thought about swapping out this term or search in this way? Because, you know, just somebody else's different perspective might be just what you need.
I did try that. I think I broke some developers.
You have a way.
The next thing that's related to staying shallow in your search that I have is to be picky about which results you dig into. This kind of goes back to the sites that do and don't work. If you're looking through the list, don't open every single one. Open the ones that you think will help. And if you realize that they won't help, get out. Go back to your search page and move further down, or redefine your search terms. The third one is to skim the resulting sites. And this is, I don't mean skim, like just roll your eyes from the top to the bottom of the screen. But like, you know, just read that title, read the quick description, because a lot of them have like a little paragraph underneath them, you know, read the first sentence of that, or even actually skim that paragraph to see if it actually contains any of the keywords that you're searching for, or maybe it has some word in it that makes you think they might solve your problem. And the last one that I have is TLDR. So if you crack open something, even if you think it's going to be super promising and it's 15 pages long, just don't. Back out. There is a shorter solution somewhere that somebody has written down. You do not need the 15, 16 page description of what's going on.
But I read all 15 pages and now I don't know where I am.
Right. I haven't seen too many sites do it lately, but older sites would have TLDR. So it's like, hey, here's this long form article that I wrote that's going to explain what's going on. If you just want to know how to fix it, jump to the bottom. So I might even do that. Like, I just jump straight to the conclusion, like people who read books poorly. and just see if they go, oh, and that's how you solve my problem. In which case, then you can roll back up a little bit and try to figure out where exactly they are solving the problem. But you don't need, it's unlikely that you need to read the entire 15-page article in order to understand how to fix your problem, because you just want to fix the problem. You're in the weeds. You want to get it fixed. Don't waste, 3 hours reading somebody's article.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean you should expect to find something you can just copy and paste.
Unless you're on Stack Overflow.
If John Skeet put something on there, just copy paste it. You're good.
I think what you're describing is a very condensed thing, but it's probably one of the most powerful pieces to this. And being able to pick up information, skimming it really, really, really quickly, and understanding, is this valuable or is this not? It is a learned skill,
definitely,
and it does require a lot of kind of work. But and like you're saying, you want to get to the information that's important. I think some people try to, especially junior developers that are sort of nervous in the weeds and they're trying to come to the solution, they will end up sort of jumping to conclusions in order to try and get to that solution faster. And that's a thing to avoid, a kind of counter the other direction.
Right. You have to go. So the more experienced you are at solving the classification of problem that you're dealing with, the faster that you can make these decisions of, that's too long, I'm not going to read it, or I'm just going to skim this one, or, you know, whatever. If you are newer to this, or you find that you're struggling with finding answers when you're searching for things, then you need to go through all these steps a lot slower. And you know, I can probably go through a 15-page article and quickly get the information that I care for out of it. Maybe you can't. If you can't, that's fine. Go at the speed that you can go. Certainly don't try to go faster than you can go. Make sure that you comprehend the steps that you're taking. because the worst thing you could do is go faster than you actually can. You know, there's nothing dumber than getting on a motorcycle and going just as fast as you can when it's the first time you've ever been on a motorcycle. Like, slow down, only go the speed that you can actually go without hurting yourself. In the case of search results, it's taking the time to slow down and look at each result independently. And then I will skim. So for the articles, for the larger articles, I will skim the headings to find the to find which heading is going to most likely be the thing that's going to help me. And then once I find a heading that I like, I will skim the paragraphs. And once I find keywords that I like or code snips that I like, then I'll start digging a little bit further. But I'll skim it first and then go back and hit the points that I thought were interesting with more detail. But it takes a certain amount of skill or experience doing that in order to properly pull out the information that you want. So if you're newer to this, or you feel like you're not doing as good as you could be doing, then definitely slow down and take your time. It's okay if it's a little bit slower. If you try to go too fast, you'll never get the information, and you'll take way longer than if you just take a little bit of time to slow down and fix it.
All right. And with that, we'd love to hear from you, dear listener. Do you have any tips and tricks on how to find the search results that you're looking for? How do you solve the problem?
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.